Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to the Lenten Rouge Cycling Podcast for the Criterium du Dauphiné time trial, a 31K time trial, longer than the Tour de France time trial kilometers, which is interesting, but many of the Tour de France competitors here, and it is, I mean, it's a hilly TT. It is not as nearly as hard as what is almost a mountainous time trial in the Tour de France, but it's an indication of, you know, who can time trial, who can pace, etc., particularly with the likes of Vingegaard, who was the prohibitive, more than odds on favorite for this stage, actually, and then Hindley, O'Connor, and Yates. How are they working on their time trials? And then there's the Landers, the Mass of the world, and Haig, like, who are, have they improved their time trial over the offseason? For Lander, not so much. And Jorgensen, who did a really good TT in Romandy, could he and Velasco pull something out of the bag? Anyway, the profile was 31 kilometers, starts at 510 meters, immediately does the Col de la Croix covert, the covered cross, maybe. 2.2K, at 5% or near enough. Then there is a 7-kilometer non-technical pedaling descent if you got a 60 on. Then a little 300-meter 6% pickup, and straight after that is the T1. And then another rolling descent to T2 at Saint-Denis de Cabanes, 19.5Ks. And then the final, can I do maths? I can. 11.5 kilometers is gradually, it goes from like 1% to 2% to 3%, and then the last maybe K is 4%, and it's a little bit steeper at the line, finishing actually lower than where it started in Belmont de la Loire. So an interesting time trial, sort of similar to last year's Rocamadour time trial, I think a little bit different to finish. What did you? Who does this suit, Benji, before we do the result? Like, who is the perfect rider for this?
Well, first of all, you've got parts in this time trial that fit to other riders. For example, the first uphill section is obviously for the climbers that will probably have a better time on that section, but then they might have trouble in the downhill and on the flat section, where the riders that have one maybe more technique but also next to that have a higher weight, those rulers might be able to gain time on the pure climbers in the middle section of the time trial. And then the last section is kind of interesting because it's a type of false flat where even the rulers can still do their bidding. So the specific riders that it fits, I was thinking the Cavagnat that had his time on the Planche de Belfia time trial, that Cavagnat is perfect for this. Because can survive that, then can do well on the flat section and the last climbing section, but we haven't seen that Cavagnat in a while. So which other riders fit that? Vingegaard was a rider that would definitely do well on this parkour. I thought he was going to win this time trial.
So did
before I. The time trial.
So I thought Cavagna, I just didn't like Cavagna's shape this year so far. And I think we've made a habit. It's kind of a rule of the podcast that we just, we don't, not only do we not pick him for the TT, we pretend like he's not even doing it. So obviously we didn't pick him, but I sometimes have question marks over his pacing, both in road races and time trials. And we'll see that in his stage. I think Vingegaard, yeah, in theory he should win, but also the downhill is significantly worse for him than just a flat section, because he's still under 60 kilograms and it's not technical. So if he wants to go as quick as a 75 basic physics, a 72, 73 kilo rider, or maybe even a 68 kilo rider like an O'Connor, a Haig, a Groschartner, they have to push 450. He has to push 450, but 450 divided by 60, I can't do maths, is over 7 watts per kilo, and it's less for them. So it is interesting how the downhill, I think, made a really, really big difference in this time trial.
But one thing, I would say that this is also the time trial where Wout van Aert really does shine. The rolling terrain, he would probably destroy people on this time trial, I would expect. But one more thing, you spoke about it shortly at the start, before we go into the results. This is a very long time trial for a 1 week stage race, while at the Tour de France, it's a short time trial for a 21-day stage race. And I like stage races having a good balance between the amount of advantage that a GC rider with a time trial ability can gain in a time trial, while the pure GC riders can try and fight back in the mountains. And I feel like there's a bit of a... It's a lot of time trial compared to the amount of time you can gain in the mountains, I think, in this Dauphiné parkour.
I disagree. I think, given the gaps to say, if you're a professional, like Hindley is a professional, Adam Yates is a professional. Yeah, if you're Lander and you ship 4 minutes or 3 minutes because you're not a professional on the TT bike, well, let's be real, then, yeah, you're not going to take that back. But, I mean, there's some serious climbs later in the race where, okay, yeah, a minute on Vingegaard. The problem is the best GC riders now are the best climbers and the best time trial riders.
Exactly.
Pog, Vingegaard, Remco, Roglic. Anyway, buried the lead. The surprise winner, he's been waiting several years for it. A Danish rider. He's been in World Tour now his fourth season after being the triple U23 world champion in this discipline. Mikkel Bjerg finally gets his first professional victory, and by some margin too. Now, he's a big rider. I think he's leaned up, if I guess, a little bit. I mean, his PCS says 78 kilos, but I think he's in climbing condition, and he's an interesting rider who I think is actually... could turn into on 5-7% gradients and hilly TTs like this is actually maybe what he's better at than trying to run top 10 in Omloop, which I think he had okay classics, but looked lean and he knocked us out of the park, winning the time trial. Let me have a look. 12 seconds ahead of Jonas Vingegaard, both with a 49.5 k an hour average, so not a 55 kph TT or a 40 kph proper climbing TT. Either one in the middle. Cavagna third on 27 seconds. So he lost a lot of time. We'll talk about the time splits in a second. Beaten by Vingegaard. That gap between him and Vingegaard, predictable. Bjerg is the surprise. Fred Ryder, very good TT on 34 seconds. Another big upset. Ben O'Connor on 41 seconds. 29 seconds behind Vingegaard is his best TT ever. Outstanding performance from him and Groschartner too, and UAE overall. He's on 44. Perrohots, outstanding performance. I mean, I'd love to see what this kid could do on... I'm not knocking into Marche. Budgets are different, but let's be real. Like, their setup is not UAE and Ineos Jumbo's setup.
Put him on a specialised.
Just a pain of special with the Q. Yates on 57 seconds. He blew up a little bit at the end. He loses 45 seconds to Vingegaard. Maybe Luke in the background will tot up some GC gaps for us to the main guys. Oliveira on 102. Castroviejo, the two veterans... who love a TT top 10, 102, 105. Martinez, 107, the next big GC guy. And Hindley, they're around there as well. But Bjerg, Benji.
Yep.
Pacing was perfect. And just a big, big win for him and must be great for his confidence after being so dominant in the U23s, then nothing, not even really close, frankly, for the last three seasons. And then you beat Vingegaard and Cavagna in a World Tour level TT.
Exactly. Like, he's a versatile rider, right? We've seen him in the... Tour de France last year, being a domestique on the days that he was in good shape, because he had some days where he was in terrible form, some days where he was in incredible form, and to see him now back to his roots where he came from, because those three consecutive World Championships U23 titles, that was quite a process, I would expect. And then he ended up becoming a pro, and that time trial capability was still there, but the level to beat the actual top level riders every single time, that boost upwards didn't seem to happen. And then he started to get into other terrain types, try and figure out where he can do other stuff. But he's never also, I feel like he also has never been that breakaway guy either, while he probably can do so if he got the opportunities in many different occasions to do so. But for example, top 10 in Gent-Wevelgem this year, that's something completely different than this time trial. Then again, you mentioned it. Time splits. He had his slower time on the climbing section at the start, which is logical, eh? But it's also because he didn't purposely blow up on that mountain uphill section. He knows that is his weaker time, so he tries to take a bit of damage, do a bit of a negative split, and then on the flat section that comes afterwards, in the descent that comes afterwards, that's where he takes his time back on the other riders that are not as good on that terrain. And Jonas Vingegaard is the perfect example in this time trial of a rider that did that. And towards the end, Bjerg had a very good last segment, which is from T2 to the finish line, where I'm like, there's not a lot of riders that have their best time in that segment. And that's kind of that false flat uphill segment where you kind of need to be a ruler, a but still have the capability of not blowing up after such an effort, right?
Exactly, because it's like, oh, why isn't Vingegaard going so much better? And I'll get to Jumbo and his setup and Vingegaard in a second, but he still doesn't have an advantage over a 70-kilo rider pushing big watts on 3%. You'd rather be 70 kilos pushing 480 watts than whatever he weighs pushing the same watts per kilo, maybe higher watts per kilo, but you're not going to go as fast as basic physics. And Bjerg paced it masterfully because that T1 is still 53.5 km/h average. Jonas averaged 55. So it's essentially, and he lost 20 seconds to Jonas at T1. So on the climb itself, I think Bjerg shipped 30 seconds to Vingegaard. 30. Yep. He, not crawled, but compare that to Cavagna, who did the climb maybe 8, 10 seconds quicker than Mikkel Bjerg, and also at T2 then was this on the same time. But it's a different story from T1 to T2, which is just before the final climb kicks up. There, Cavagna started to bleed time, 8 seconds to Bjerg in that section. This is a flat, quote-unquote flat section at 55 km/h average. And then T2 to the finish, as you said, Bjerg just destroyed him. Cavagna finished 10th on that section. He averaged 42 km/h average. And lost 18 plus 9, quick maths, is 27 seconds to Bjerg. So Bjerg paced it absolutely beautifully, and so did Groschartner, very similar too, consistent splits. Adam Yates blew up, actually, and maybe he didn't pace it properly because he seems to, if I have to guess, and this is a complete guess, and maybe I'm wrong and he just blew up and that's how it is, but he finished 8th, right? Losing six positions in T2 to the finish in the final 15 minutes. But he did the climb 13 and to T1, 13 seconds slower than Vingegaard and only 7 seconds quicker than Bjerg. And I wonder if he got put on virtually the same pacing plan as the bigger guys. And then T1 to T2, he was sixth, right? 5 seconds is a flat section, 5 seconds quicker than Vingegaard on the flat section, and then he's 19th on the uphill section where he should be, okay, maybe not winning or being the best, but 19th? So I think Yates, either he blew up or they got the pacing wrong with him, and they got it very, very right with Bjerg.
Yeah, but when it comes to the pacing plan and so forth, while the results look like that, I would expect that UAE does realize that a pacing plan needs to be adapted to the rider itself, right? Because there's a clear difference between Adam Yates and Mikkel Bjerg in the rider top in this time trial. But the thing as well is, Groschartner, he's kind of the most consistent one, eh? In this top 10. I feel like he's the rider that came ninth on the first time check after having the climb at the start. He's also kind of the versatile rider here where he has had good time trials in the past and has had good climbing performances in the past. And he kind of keeps that up because he remains seventh basically throughout the rest of the time trial. But I gotta be honest, if we look at all the difference of all the riders and we take a look at the season so far and we hone in a bit on Jonas Vingegaard and Jumbo Visma for a second, we go into this time trial expecting Jonas Vingegaard to win. Has Bjerg overperformed compared to our expectations? Yes. Yeah. Has Vingegaard underperformed compared to our expectations?
I reckon there's about 10, 15 seconds in there, yeah. About which is about Bjerg's time because he lost 12 seconds to him. 29 seconds. Now, I know O'Connor did a really good TT, and as I said, there is an advantage for O'Connor, but would I expect Vingegaard in a 31K TT? And this is the GC gaps from Jonas, thanks to Luke. Jonas to the other GC guys. O'Connor, 29 seconds. Yates, 45 seconds. Martinez, 55 seconds. Hindley, 56 seconds. Haig, 103. Rodriguez, terrible one at 148. He crashed yesterday, but so did Jorgensen, who lost less time than that on 112, maybe to Jonas, or one minute. Gadouf, awful, 210. But yeah, this is also being super critical, Benji, because at the end of the day, it's a 58-kilo rider on a 50-kilometer-an-hour average big ring TT. But I do think, yeah, like, I definitely do not think Jumbo Visma have a better TT setup noticeably than UAE or Ineos. They have better riders in terms of Vingegaard, particularly compared to Ineos, but is the setup better? I'm not entirely sure. Now, pacing plan is different to setup. So when we get to this Tour de France TT, like we saw with, that's why Roglic, first TT in, what's the race he just won? Giro. I tried to put it in the back of my memory. First TT, awful. 45 seconds, 48 seconds. Should have been, you know, you'd think you'd be with Almeida, but oh, he's got bad legs. I'm not sure. Then the final TT, their pacing plan was brilliant. So pacing plan versus equipment. So really, how much does this TT matter for the Tour for Jonas if he's lost 0.1% on the 55 count hour sections? Nothing really, frankly, because the TT and the Tour is 600 meters climbing in like 20Ks. So doesn't matter for the Tour, but yeah, it's just something to note. We haven't seen Wout do a full gas TT this year, have we?
We have not seen that. We might see it at the Belgian Championships if he does both the road race and the time trial, which I'm hoping Wout does.
Nah, injured knee for road race.
Well, this time around, we won't we won't believe the excuse of an injured knee, because I think they need to ride the Belgian Championships to do the World Championships or something for the Belgian team. I think there's something crazy like that in our rule set. But that
Swiss
being
said, Swiss will do
two. Yes,
two
very time correct.
Thanks,
that's Luke. Coming up very shortly. You mentioned the Jumbo stuff and so forth. I also feel like a lot of the times this year we had the feeling that, oh, this is a slightly worse than we expected when it comes to the time trial of Jumbo Visma rider. And maybe that's super coincidental. Maybe that's indeed pacing plan. Maybe that's indeed something with equipment. But to be honest, equipment-wise, if we take a look at last year they were on point when it comes to their time trials every single time, team time trials every single time, year before, on point, the Olympics, for example, on point. They're always one step ahead, it felt like. While maybe Jumbo-Visma's equipment didn't necessarily become worse,
yeah,
but the opponents turned and made something better or upgraded the way they work on their aerodynamics or have a better specialist in town. I don't know, something like that, because I feel like the changes that we see compared to the bike of last year, which is SRAM coming in and their tires changing and so forth, and their wheels changing, like those
same
things?
Wheels.
Same wheels?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
For the TTs,
reserve.
Yeah.
Or
they already use the reserves.
Yeah. That difference can't be that crazy,
no.
Right?
I think you're right. I think that's right. The others maybe have caught up, and the big advantage they had before maybe, or the 0.5% advantage they have, is now equal. And I think that's right. UAE look to, in terms of equipment, be virtually a level playing field, maybe even with Jayco as well, and Ineos too. Now, pacing in the rider's legs also matter too, not just equipment. But yeah, and this is all also very anecdotal, just a feeling I have. Anyway, other riders, O'Connor's pacing plan was very similar to Vingegaard's. He was slower on the climb than Bjerg, and then he just whacked the last section. He was only 10 seconds slower than Bjerg on that section. He was third on there. I don't know who was second. Craddock, which is just, I don't know why. Like, dude.
He was 51st after the first segment, Craddock.
And he just whacked the final bit. So congrats, I guess.
Pacing plan there was on point.
Yeah, mind blowing. I'm trying to look at people. Yeah, Yates is the big one where I say blew up. Oh, same with Danny Martinez, Benji. He did a good TT. Like, it's fine. He lost, you know, less than a minute to Vingegaard.
Yeah,
but third at T1, 26th, losing a minute to Bjerg on that final drag.
Crazy.
So he went out way too hard. I'm looking for... we do have to get into the negative people, unfortunately. Now, Rodriguez
the
paced
consistently. People.
Well, the people that didn't do a good TT. Rodriguez, just no watts, because, yeah, he just finished 25th with consistent pacing. Jorgensen had consistent enough pacing, but he just, he couldn't really stay close enough.
And crashed.
Hindley did
yesterday.
A good TT, I would say.
Yeah, Jorgensen crashed yesterday. Hindley, I agree.
True.
Hindley definitely on point when it comes to his time trial, because I expected him to lose more time today. As simple as that. But when it comes to Mas, it was a bit weird, right? Hendrik Mas in this time trial, because on one end, PCS was reporting that he abandoned, and then Movistar said that he finished. So we had a bit of Schrodinger's Mas in this race. He was both in and out of the race at the same time. But he did finish, I'm pretty sure, 33rd after the first time check. Then 63rd in the last segment. I don't know what happened with Mas. I feel like the last few days he's not been He lost time on the first stage. That was already an indicator. But this time trial is, even for Maz, awful.
Yeah, Maz is better than, should be better than this. So I don't know what's going on there. Maybe because we're in France. But like, he is not Mikel Landa level, and he only beat him by 9 seconds. So Landa just obviously a horrendous performance.
Carapaz too.
Carapaz, shocking performance too. Like, I know, and it is same with Guru Benji. They're all losing over 2 minutes, like 2 minutes in this TT, whether it's your setup, whether that's blowing up. Yeah. If I look at David Guru, he was 18th at T1 and then 50th in the final section. So he did blow up, finishing 34th in the end. The reason you can say it's terrible is because look at Jai Hindley. Jai Hindley is about the same size. He's not a 70-kilo rouleur. He's not 68 kilos like maybe O'Connor or Groschartner. He's a lightweight climber too. And he's finishing, yeah, he's not close, but he's on 56 seconds to Jonas, not 2 minutes 10. And is that just the equipment? Is that he takes riding on the TT bike more seriously and trains on it more? Is that the pacing plan? I think it could be a combination of many of those factors, but the EF setup is pretty slick, and so is Movistar's isn't. So I don't know. but I'm just saying there's really no excuse. If Hindley can get that close, maybe, yeah, sure, the specialized setup is really fast. But yeah, great performance from him, and it just, he now puts a big difference between him and himself and other people who might podium this race. And that's the difference maybe between third and sixth in the final GC standings. Anything else from this TT GC-wise, Benji?
GC-wise, no, but stage-wise, something very important that you overlooked. Honestly, shameful display, my friend, Mr. Lantern of the House Rouge, that we haven't spoken about our head-to-head, the legendary head-to-head, Guillaume Martin versus Tobias' former enemy, Johannessen. They finished 35th and 38th.
I knew it was close.
2 minutes 25 and 2 minutes 32. And the winner is Guillaume Martin by 7 seconds. And to
be
honest,
me?
I actually don't know.
I can't remember. I knew he'd
boring
try
outcome.
More. But yeah.
A good time trial for them, though. Not losing 3 minutes 46 like I predicted.
Yeah, 3:46 would be pretty bad. Only and where to pull? I'm just looking for pool.
Not good.
That's a bad TT, isn't he? Did a better one in Romandy. So yeah, just maybe people are out of shape. They come back from altitude, a few surprising things. But yeah, good to see O'Connor up there, and Björk gets his first ever
also,
professional win.
Ben Turner crashed out.
Oh yeah, that's a shame.
I don't think we mentioned that. He's been crashing out of everything this season, unfortunately. Because he started the season really well, and I expected big things from him, but he hasn't been able to show it because he's been crashing out everywhere. So let's hope he doesn't have anything serious. We already heard that Hayter had something serious when it comes to injury. Kreiswijk with something serious when it comes to injury. So hopefully Turner isn't out for future races either. But yeah, he's out as well. Another Ineos rider bites the dust.
Fucking poor old Josh Tarling might be roped into the tour. Like, he's had the hardest teenage neopro season in cycling history. I'm not even joking. Like, look at his race
Thomas.
Schedule. It's crazy. nah, Thomas didn't want a domestique for Carapaz back in the day, so in 2021, so he's not going to go. I mean, the Netflix series comes out tomorrow morning. I read a French review that there was debate about letting Pidcock go for the stage last year, whether he
really?
Should go for this. Yeah, but this is just a Google translated French review. So anyway, we're going to be watching that tomorrow morning. We'll have a, we're going to do a recap podcast. So get binging Monday, because I'm not doing every Swiss stage. I'm telling you now, Benji. Monday, we're going to do our Netflix series recap. So you have been warned. You have this weekend to listen to the series. We'll tweet this as well, if we can, Luke, to let people forewarn them that they have to binge the 8 episodes from tomorrow morning to Sunday and then hear our thoughts on Monday. But yeah. Hopefully Björk can kick on, but UAE looking good for the tour, Benji. I mean, we haven't seen Pogacar, but he just did a 160K training ride with 4,000 meters elevation today where he was humming. And
humming?
Well, yeah, he's flying. And then Yates, Groschartner, and Björk looking in great shape. So they're looking pretty on point for the Tour de la France. 191Ks tomorrow from Cormoranche-Saône to Salins-les-Bains. Now, it is flat for the first 90 kilometers, so that'll be interesting for brake formation. And then, Medium Mountain Deluxe, 4Ks, 4%, rolling, whatever. Then there's an intermediate sprint, and then they at the finish line, and then they go and do the Côte d'Ivory, 2.2Ks, 5.7%, with some steeper sections in there, 7% sections at the start. Then another rolling ridgeline descent, and then straight into the Côte de Teze. So there'll be a big tizzy in the descent, fighting for position before that climb. 3.7Ks, 8.2%, the first 1800 meters average over 10%. That's 14Ks from the finish before there's a little false summit and then a descent straight into the finish. So I hope this is giving me Basque Country flashbacks, Benji. You know that stage shelling one? I hope this is more selective. Now, the climb is steeper, it's shorter, but because that climb was not difficult at all. I have to go, Alaphilippe should be the favorite for this stage. He's in good shape. His TT was much better than I expected. I don't think Laporte makes it. I think it'll be a reduced group. He'll go full beans on the descent, throat of death, and then they're going to hit the finish at like a million kilometers an hour. Alaphilippe has to be the favorite.
I think so as well. And the reasoning is also, Quickstep, why would they not target this stage? Because it's, why are they here otherwise? Because this is the kind of stage that you'd be trying to control for Alaphilippe.
Now, good team for it,
the question there is, who's going to help them control a stage like this? Is Jumbo going to put someone at the front because they believe Laporte is going to survive that final climb? That's unsure to me. I feel like Alaphilippe has the better hand on paper for this final climb. Are there other teams that are interested that have similar riders that I'm like, looking at the start list and I'm like, well, EF won't control for Carapaz. They'll just use the ability if the opportunity presents itself. And there's so many teams that are like that, where they will only try and win the stage if the opportunity presents themselves. But then I also look at the start of the stage, and it's not an uphill start. It's nothing crazy. It's a flat start. And I'm like, there might not be a big breakaway. And it kind of depends on how big the breakaway is, on whether Quickstep can control it. But I kind of don't feel like it's going to be that major of a breakaway either.
I agree, because it's a flat start. I mean, Ineos really should let Fraile have a go at this stage. It's perfect for him on the climb, and then the full threat of death descent. I don't know how technical it is, but please, for fuck's sake, let Fraile have a go. Like, I know Martinez might top five GC, but I mean, they have, how many World Tour wins they have? They have 4 World Tour wins this year. Jumbo's got 21, UAE got a million, Quickstep got a million. They're falling behind those three teams. I know they nearly won the Giro, but yeah, let Fraile have a go would be my suggestion. Otherwise, but they're not going to control either. They just lost. Rodriguez crashed. Turner's their big engine. He just crashed out. So yeah, to your point, they're going to hope the race comes together. I'm looking through. Sean Quinn, maybe. I mean, EF do have some very nice riders to play numbers on the climb. And Groupama, again, like, wouldn't you love Madouas to get a chance here, or Genietz? Like, there are a lot of riders who could win this stage and who could make the climb really interesting. Even Ciccone could attack on this climb, or even Bjerg or Groschartner, but they're all kind of hamstrung by GC. I don't agree with that. I wouldn't personally just happily walk along the ridgeline with Alaphilippe and then have Laporte come back, because if you go to this finish with Alaphilippe and Laporte, you will lose. They are too fast. If you saw, like, Jala put lengths on everybody the other day. So maybe Alpecin Benji will help for Stannard?
Podium von Hills.
Ah, he's a good pick now. Lotto should almost help.
I don't agree there. I think
should
if
on the
you're
break.
Lotto, you just put the Yen in a breakaway to make sure the break is a thing.
Yeah.
Or Van Moor in a break or whatever. A rider that Van Moor probably is a bit difficult with his final climb, so I'd rather put the Yen in there, even though his form isn't shouting that he's going to win a break stage anytime soon, but that's often the case, and then he win a break stage out of nowhere. Anyway, Van Hills can compete for the victory here. I don't think he can win. I think he can podium. And considering this is a more selective final climb than the first two stages, he should be able to get a better result than those first two stages. So I think I like that pick. What do you think of Zangla for this one?
Too hard. He was nowhere on stage two, where I really thought he could have a chance to win. So if he was nowhere, but because Quickstep should absolutely send this climb. with Bagioli and co. Yeah, so maybe a big breakaway goes. I don't have a great feel for it. Maybe Pierre Latour gets in the break and it's a big break, and it's kind of like the stage that Viermoz won. I don't think so, though. If I'm Quickstep, I really draw a circle around this for Alaphilippe and lock it down. So, yeah, should be interesting. Decent final. Do you think there'll be GC gaps, Benji? I mean, I think the only people that get dropped on this climb are people who are in bad shape anyway, like maybe Mas.
Yep. People that are not at their top will be losing time. But
yeah,
I think the people like a Vingegaard and the people that are actively fighting Vingegaard for this actual Dauphiné, those riders should not be losing any time on this terrain. Because, like, while a Vingegaard might respond to an Alaphilippe, I don't know. Can Alaphilippe get away with the climb? Old school Alaphilippe would.
Yeah.
Current Alaphilippe, I'm not sure if he has the full confidence to go with that move.
I kind of think that's
a reverse lead out.
That's not a bad idea to just full send him, and Vingegaard will be able to follow, and Vingegaard will just work with you for GC.
Yeah, that's a possibility. Or you 1-2 where you send Bagioli in the attack and you let Alaphilippe respond to people who then close Bagioli for you, and then you win the final sprint, something like that. But
yeah, okay.
Multiple stuff is possible for a quick step for the victory tomorrow.
Looking forward to the last hour and a half. Dauphiné's building up nicely. Vingegaard's got the lead that he expected. Can anyone challenge him? UAE, I think, are looking the most likely. Their team looks very, very good, and Yates looks very sharp. So Hindley and O'Connor also have to be considered. So it's working up towards a nice weekend. And we've got the first medium mountain test tomorrow for everybody. But I hope you enjoyed the podcast. And we'll see the recap of tomorrow's stage then. Till then, ciao.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.